We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
I don't, you know, public and confidential. I think, you know, as public as it needs to be, I think is the best answer. Like, I'm not sure we're going to roll guys out here for press conferences and everything. It's something that we did, I think, for the first time, you know, 15 years ago. I don't necessarily want to do that, but we'll try to make sure it's a smooth process and you guys can follow along at an appropriate distance.
Middays on the Score.
Well, what's an appropriate distance, Theo? You're just walking out of the Starbucks there doing your little glamour shot. I don't know. I mean, obviously you want us to see what's going on. Let's talk about the Cubs with Sahadev Sharma. He knows all about him. He has been busy with them for this entire season that is still kind of going, even though they're done playing baseball. He's on Twitter at Sahadev Sharma. He joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, over 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Hello, Sahadev.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you?
Are you following from an appropriate distance, or have you gotten to the inappropriate distances?
Well, I'm not staking out the offices and waiting to talk to Girardi or Ross just yet. I'll leave that to others for now. But I mean, honestly, if we're gonna be completely honest here, I really think yes, you have to hire the right manager, you know, get the right person in place. I just think for this offseason, it's the first step. It's not the biggest step. This offseason is so critical. And, you know, we say that a lot. Obviously, every offseason is pretty critical, but this one just feels so huge. And I really think the biggest impact is not going to be who they hire for manager. I've said all along that I feel strongly that it's likely going to be Ross. Obviously, things can change during the interviewing process, and surprises can happen, and people can be, you know, really blow Theo and Jed out of the water with an interview, perhaps, and really say some things that strike a chord with them. But I really think how they change things in the background with the player development and amateur scouting, and the players that they add and who they trade and how aggressive they are and what type of value certain players have on the trade market. I think that's what's going to decide this team's future. And if we can start to trust Theo Epstein and this front office again to really put together one of the best rosters in baseball, like we all expected them to do year after year after what we saw in 15 and 16.
I'm with you, Sahadev. I think that's absolutely critical. And I think while the manager matters some, the bigger part is how they change the nuts and bolts of how they develop players and which players they're looking at. What do you know, if anything yet, about the Cubs' search for director of hitting and director of pitching? Theo mentioned that those are likely additions. Are those contingent on who gets hired as a manager? Are those separate hires altogether? And where do they fit? Where should they fit in the hierarchy?
Yeah, no, those are separate, and it's all about, I guess it's, this is key with the manager as well. It's, you know, look at the Astros and how AJ Hinch is, right? He's essentially a part of the front office, and right, you know, he's not a yes man. Nobody would call AJ Hinch a yes man, but he is very strongly united with Lanao, and they have a lot of collaboration and communication. So when you talk about a director of pitching, director of hitting, they're going to be a huge part of making sure this collaboration and communication works, that Tommy Hotovy is talking to the director of pitching, and when there's a guy in Double A that's doing something and the Cubs are missing that, it's like, hey, maybe we skip this guy, maybe this guy's ready to come up right away type stuff, these are the types of things that we're doing to maximize these talents. And it's happening in rookie ball, it's happening in Double A, and it's happening at the major leagues, and they have similar concepts and ways to describe these things and ways to communicate. It's all going to be, you know, a huge, that the organization is going to be one unit in a sense. And the Cubs kind of fell behind in that, behind teams like the Astros, like the Dodgers, like the Yankees, teams that they kind of envy that they're able to do these things at all levels and improve players, not only through development in the minor leagues, but at the major league level. As far as who these guys are going to be, the director of hitting, director of pitching, I'm still working on, I have had some some lines of communication out, and I believe that it's going to be wrapped up sooner rather than later, but I think the focus is the manager right now, so it's kind of taking a little bit of a back burner.
You reported right before last season began that Theo and Jed, this is part of a report about how they were going to be more hands-on. Part of it was literal proximity, was working out of an office that was closer to the clubhouse, of making sure that everybody knew that they were in charge of this thing, that they were aware of what was going on. That was the article that you wrote about the circled games, if I remember correctly. What happens now? What happens if we assume that no matter who the manager is more of a front office piece, more of a conduit for what they want? Must they maintain more visibility and presence, or is that just assumed now to be the case, that they don't have to play any of those optics games anymore?
Yeah, that's a good question in the sense, I mean, they traveled more. I saw Jed and Theo on the road a lot more this past season. I assume that was something that the players suggested to them as well. This wasn't like Theo trying to have a heavy hand and say, I'm going to be more involved because you need me there. I think the players wanted to see them around too and kind of get that feeling of what I just discussed, like everybody's working together. I'd be surprised if that changed outside of, you know, when you move up higher in the chain, the travel does reduce a bit, and you would think that, more time with the family and stuff like that, that's the benefits of being higher up in the food chain in this business. But it's also, you know, these are ultra-competitive people that if that's what they believe they need to do to create that culture and build what they expect and want, then yeah, they'll make those sacrifices and continue to travel as much as they did and be around the team in that fashion, not only at home but on the road.
So out of most Cubs fans, or at least most that we've heard of, that don't like the idea of hiring David Ross, deride it as kind of like a crony hire or like the easy hire, or maybe just following in the footsteps of other teams that have made similar hires. Does that have merit at all to you?
I think it's because, you know, it's easy for fans to just say, oh, he was, you know, he's just a player that got along with all the other players, and now this is the trend in baseball. But Ross was pegged as a manager well before he came to the Cubs. This wasn't something that they just pulled out of the sky and said, yep, this guy's a manager. I mean, this was something that a lot of people expected. I mean, he's just like you talk about the other names that are kind of the hot names, so to say, Carlos Beltran, Raul Ibanez. Sure, they're not all interviewing for jobs. I think Ibanez has pulled his name out of consideration. But these were guys that were pegged for these jobs as players. Do they always work out? No. I mean, look at Mike Matheny. There's numerous other names that we could list that haven't worked out. So if it's not going to work out, it's not because, he was a teammate with these guys or this is a bad trend or whatever they want to point to. It's just because he wasn't the right guy at the right time. I think it would make sense if he's the guy that they choose. I understand it. He's a guy that, you know, was a team leader, and those skills usually do translate well to be a manager. He's not these guys that people that suggest that he's their buddy and he won't be able to be their boss or he won't be able to call them out. I mean, he did all those things. And I think John Lester said it well. Like, if someone's your boss, he's your boss. You just listen to them. You just do the job. It's your job. It's not like in the real world we don't see equals get promoted ahead of you that were your equal and your friend and now they're your boss. That happens in the real world too. Why can't it happen in baseball? I mean, we've seen it work with the Yankees. We've seen it work with other teams. I think all that stuff is overblown. If he's the best, if you want to just debate whether he's capable of doing the job, fine. If your anger is that he was their teammate or this is the trend and they're just following the trend, I'm not sure I really agree with that. You know, the trend is a trend for a reason. It's working.
No matter who they want to hire, would they be well served to at least interview people outside the organization in other organizations? And I guess I'm talking about Joe Espada being the guy on the team that everybody feels is state of the art. And if you get some Astros institutional knowledge in there, if you get one of these 8 or 10 hour interviews to pick a guy's brain, even if you don't end up hiring him, aren't you closer to winning a World Series knowing a little bit more about how he would do his business?
Sure. No, I agree with that. It was something Patrick and I talked about when this first popped up. You know, we both agree that Ross is the heavy favorite and would be surprised if he's not the guy. But these interviews serve a purpose. So like you said, you know, there's a reason Girardi's was 8 hours and Ross's was 4. They already know Ross. They know what they've been talking to him for years. You know, they can maybe pick something from Girardi, who was with the Yankees when all this, you know, when they really turned things around. They could definitely pick stuff up from Espada if, you know, these are long processes, and how they do discuss things that they would do as manager. I mean, that's part of the interview process. So during those discussions, there may be something shared that maybe gives you some sort of edge or insight into how these teams develop that edge. I think it's completely worthwhile. Maybe you gather nothing, or maybe it's a minimal thing, but every little bit of knowledge that you gather, however small it may be, can help.
Let me ask you about a specific name, just because it's one of these names around the fringes, and he has been involved with the Cubs. He's worked with some other teams as well. I know he was involved in spring training this year. He's a Chicago guy, Chicago-based baseball instructor named Justin Stone. And if you're not going to go, oh yeah, Justin Stone from Elite Baseball, and he's worked out of Bash over on the Northwest side, and he's taught everybody's kid how to hit and throw, and he's moved up in the business being really good at Kinetrax and some of the other modalities. Is that the kind of guy they're looking at for some sort of director of hitting, more of a teacher technician type, or are they also looking for somebody with a scouting background?
No, I think you're right. It's someone more in that mold, in the, you know, when you're talking about director of pitching, like a Kyle Body mode, mm-hmm. you know, people like that have been in the business in different ways, that are willing to kind of think outside the box, because they were forced to, right? They were forced to think outside of the box for anyone to even listen to them, for them to have a chance. They couldn't just do the same thing. For anyone to pay attention to them or for them to gain any traction, they have to do something different. If they were doing the same thing, nobody would have paid attention, because you already have experts doing those things. So they had to think outside the box, find different ways to do it. And you know, with Body especially, there's a track record now. You can see that, you know, we can talk about the injury factor that probably isn't discussed enough, but there's certainly something working with everything that they've done. I mean, you guys talk about it on the show all the time, MVP machine. There's something to it. These teams are ahead of the curve, and they figured it out. I think my biggest question, when I listen back to what Theo said, when I look at the direction that they're going, I think they're making the right decisions. They need to catch up, but I really hope that it's not just about catching up. You need to start setting the new trends. You need to figure out what's next. They can't just rely on catching up. They fell behind. Now the goal shouldn't be to catch up. The goal should be, okay, everybody needs to catch up to us. A couple years from now, we're going to be the ones that they're talking about, that look what we found, look what trends we set. Theo has to be thinking that way. I'd be very surprised if he's not. And that, you know, with all the talk of we're trying to catch up, we're trying to do this, we fell behind. He did say innovate and being cutting edge, finding the next cutting edge technology. He did say that, but I hope that's the focus and the real goal. That has to be.
Spending a little time talking over the future of the Chicago Cubs with Sahadev Sharma. You can follow him on Twitter at Sahadev Sharma. It's the Bernstein and McKnight Show. In for Lawrence Holmes today. Sahadev, I've seen your Twitter mentions, and I've looked at the comments on your articles, my friend. And for the life of me, I cannot understand why so many people expect, hope, or pray for the Cubs to either decline Jose Quintana's option or trade him as though he is a problem at $10.5 million for the 2020 season. Do you get where any of that's coming from?
I'll say this. If he wouldn't have had such a disastrous September, I can understand the desire to trade him and kind of open up a hole in the rotation if you're addressing it in other ways. It all comes down to value, and it all comes down to what you're getting. I think Theo said it. You consider trading anyone. Because if it fills a hole, if you have depth in that area, whatever it may be, and I think that's a really important thing that he said, you know, you consider who you're trading if you're trying to fill a separate hole and if you have depth in that area. People cannot forget that he said that. I think that's one of the keys to what he said last Monday. I don't completely disagree with those people, even if they're coming at it from an angle that's not completely rational, and it's just based on anger and, you know, throwing their fists in the air and being angry that Quintana has not paid off the, you know, the Eloy and Cease costs that it took to get him. But I do understand where they're kind of coming from, and honestly, I've heard that from pro scouts and people that are trying to think outside the box of ways to fix this team. Yeah. Quintana's name is one that, hey, maybe you try and dangle. But again, this was before September when I was talking to people about these things. How do you fix this team? I don't think you can do it after the September he had. That was utterly disastrous. I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but they're not pretty. And I think he barely went five innings majority of the time he was out there, and he was giving up four or five runs. So the numbers have to be absolutely atrocious from September. And I would assume that the value that he holds on the market right now, even $10.5 million is not a lot.
Right.
Especially for, I mean, it doesn't matter if he's a fifth starter. That's still cheap. You can't get that on the open market. I mean, Tyler Chatwood costs, what, 12 and a half a year. So it's, I get where they're coming from. I just don't think it can happen right now.
When do the real conversations begin to take place as Theo Epstein's phone rings and he can begin evaluating what a trade of one or more of the core players would actually bring? How and when does that get going?
Yeah, it's going to start happening in early November where you start to kind of get the feel of what's out there and what's available. You know, the GM meetings happen that first or second week of November. We'll be out in the Phoenix area, Scottsdale. And I think that's where you start to, the front offices are together. They're having their meetings. They're really kind of setting the exact plan. They have their budgets. They know what they want and what they're trying to do. And you start to get a real feel in early November. And obviously by the time the winter meetings come in early December, I would expect the Cubs to be rather aggressive. You know, again, what kind of value can they get is going to dictate all of this, but it would just be so disappointing if the same roster comes back pretty much intact with tiny little adjustments here and there, especially on offense. It would just be a surprise. I could almost understand the justification, but I can't imagine that Cubs fans are going to accept it.
Oh God, no, they'd be furious. What, as we wrap it up here, Sahadev, do you have any expectations of a dark horse candidate for the managerial spot emerging? And if Joe Espada fits the bill there, then that's fine and that's all. But do you think they have all their guys, you know, together and ready and set for interviews? And also, is there a chance David Ross gets an interview somewhere else, or does his status as you know, front runner here for the Cubs job kind of ward off other teams?
Yeah, I think to answer the second question first, I think he is kind of focused on the Cubs. I think that's what he wants, and he's willing to, you know, he's thought about this a lot, obviously, and the fact that he's going through this process means he's willing to sacrifice the family time and everything that he said. He, you know, all the reasons he was retiring, I think he's willing to put those to the side and focus on baseball again. As far as the dark horse, I would be surprised if there's someone that just pops up. I haven't heard any whispers of, hey, watch out for this guy or anything like that. I mean, Espada really would be the guy. I mean, there are multiple connections to the org, too. I mean, he's Brandon Hyde's brother-in-law. I believe there were some ties from another organization that he was with. He makes a lot of sense. If Ross wasn't such a clear-cut candidate, I really think they just waited out until he can interview it, and he could be like he would be a strong leader if it wasn't for Ross. So I'm still in the mold of, this is Ross's job to lose. If something happens along the way, it surprises us. Hey, that happens a lot. Mm-hmm. But I'd be really shocked if we're not sitting at a David Ross press conference in a few weeks.
Last thing for you, Sahadev, is the process still what it always has been? Because I remember when this began, when they ended up with Dale Swaim and, you know, Pete McCannon was coming through, just how many candidates talked about the intensity and how thorough it was. And McCann, I remember even being a little shaken. That it was just hours and hours and hours of this situation, what do you do? This situation, what do you do? This hypothetical, what do you do? And almost as if they're trying to wear a guy down to bring it out of him. The Madden thing, obviously a little bit different. There was some deference there. That was, but that still was hours and hours and hours. It just had beer and wine as part of it. Is their process the same, or do they tweak it every time as it evolves?
I think it's pretty intensive, especially with the guys they don't have a long relationship with. And I think what we talked about before, they want to see how these people react in these pressure situations. You're right. It is. It almost is like you're trying to wear them down because you want them to be. I mean, that's how it's going to be. Game 150 of the season. You are worn down. I mean, that's how life is. So you have to kind of try and build that situation as best as you can. It's impossible to do, but you try and get as close as you can. I think it's changed. It's evolved. There are different ways that they go about it, but it is pretty intense, and they should be long. I remember, that they were commenting. I was talking to someone in the front office, and they were talking about another hire. Apparently, it was in a different sport. They said, how can you just hire the first person you interview? How do you not, after a couple hours, you're ready to just hire this person? They were kind of blown away that a team in another sport would just hire someone after one interview and just go forward with that hire. That's not how they look at it. That's not how they want it. Even if Ross is the heavy favorite, they're not going to just hand the job to him in that sense. That there's going to be a rigorous process here.
Sahadev, thank you very much, man. Really appreciate it.
Of course. Thanks for the time. Take care, guys.
Sahadev Sharma, brought to you by Subway. Subway restaurants feature a different 6-inch sub for $3.79 every day. Subway, make it what you want. At a participating restaurants, additional charge for extras plus applicable tax. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied.
I don't know what people are looking at here. We're getting texts and all kinds of phone calls and all kinds of comments. That David Ross has no experience. Therefore, how could they hire him as manager?
Okay, look what's going on.
Aaron Boone didn't have any experience. Craig Counsell didn't have any experience managing. This is not unprecedented.
Just look around.
The qualifications to get yourself ready to manage a big league ball club because of what front offices are asking that manager to do have completely changed. You don't have to go manage in AA and AAA for a whole bunch of years. Certainly it helps and it changes the kind of candidate that you are. But teams just aren't looking for that guy anymore. They're not looking for Ricky Renteria to crawl his way all the way up through the ranks and earn it as a reputation, as a super utility player, and then go all the way back down to A-ball. They're not looking for Joe Maddons, who have been hitting instructors for decades and roved around and scouted for what. That's not the job anymore. They've given those jobs out to other people who have different areas of expertise, and they're looking for a different area of expertise in the manager now. It's changed.
White Sox have a new hitting coach. You see that?
Yeah, Frank Menachino is the guy.
So now you've got a hitting coach from Long Island. You got a pitching coach from Bayonne, and everybody's going to sound like this before all is said and done.
That's going to be nice. I'll be excited to watch. Yeah, I guess he's got a real comfortability with two guys that I hope are on the White Sox opening day roster. They won't be, but it'd be nice to see Nick Madrigal and Luis Robert as soon as possible.
You can't look at this hire and not think that it has something to do with that.
You ought to. You ought to think of that and think exactly that.
He's Connor McKnight. I'm Dan Bernstein. I watched the Blackhawks last night. Did you watch any of that?
I did. I did the Dan Aiello thing, but with one television. I had three things going. I had the football game, I had the baseball game, and I had the Hawks. Defense!
Kind of.
I'd like to see it.
Yeah, I was going to get a little Jay Zawoski weigh in there when we come back. Just some quick thoughts as we're trying to assess this group as we see them under Jeremy Colliton.
It's a lot of time off between hockey games. I'll give him that. But some defense would be better than,
be nice.
Than not the defense. That's where we're headed. We come back. Jay will chime in. Plus, remember, Friday, Fung at 1. Please, don't be my neighbor. Bernstein McKnight on the score. Two white guys doing Lawrence Holmes' show.
I am 100% dat bitch, by the way. And I knew that before a DNA test. I was told that.
Oh, you measured it. Yeah.
The bottom of the hour brought to you by Northwestern football. Actually, this is Northwestern basketball, interestingly enough. Join Northwestern basketball at the new Welsh Ryan Arena this season. Home opponents include Michigan State, Michigan, and Illinois. Season tickets to see Chicago's Big Ten team are on sale now at nusports.com. You know, we talked to Stan Bowman, we talked to Dylan Strome a lot about the Jeremy Colliton system, and it's supposed to be pressure, right? It's supposed to be making sure there isn't a lot of space in to get not giving the opponent time and space and trying to make sort of time and space for yourself by moving the puck aggressively. And last night, a 5-4 loss to the Sharks, and not good.
0-4 Sharks.
Not good. Yeah. really not good, and the big issue was defense. I wanted to welcome in Jay Zawoski, our Blackhawks expert, blogger, podcaster, one of the foremost Hawks authorities in this city.
Wonderful human being, too. He's fine.
That was what are we seeing early on that can give us an indication, yay or nay, that this is going to click at any point?
Well, so far it's nay, because your worst pairing defensively is your top pairing of Duncan Keith and Erik Gustafsson.
Yeah, Keith is bad.
He's bad. Gustafsson is brutal. He was called out by Jeremy Cowton the other day, and people didn't notice it because it's hockey. We don't really talk about it. But Cowton said he can be a good defender if he commits and if he's engaged. And I don't think I've ever seen him less engaged than I saw him last night. There was an opportunity for him late in the game to forecheck and keep a play alive, and he passed. But if you're going to be pinchy defenseman, you've got to pinch and forecheck. He doesn't either. So those two are bad. They're still starting like 80% of their starts in the offensive zone and are still getting slaughtered in possession. It's just awful. So Connor Murphy was with Keith this morning. It looks like DeHaan will be back tomorrow, so that should help a little bit. But teams know. Like, the Hawks are, they're very offensive-minded. They're very slow. The Sharks were working the point over and over again last night because they know the Hawks aren't going to block any shots. They're not going to get in the way of the puck. That's a problem.
As I was flipping around all night, you know, between the football game, the baseball game, and the Hawks game.
Not watching TV. Just flipping around.
Just constantly flipping. I never actually watched enough to take anything in. No, I actually saw one of Shaw's goals, like live as you're watching it, and then I saw the highlight as I flipped back another time. And then both were on commercial. So I flipped back to the second period break. It's Sharp and it's Burrish, Pat Boyle. And I love those guys. I think they do a fantastic job. Sharp and Burrish have gotten so good.
Sharp's
at doing
really good.
Hockey on television. They're really good. They're entertaining. They have a chemistry about it. But Adam Burrish is going off about this penalty that Andrew Shaw took in the middle of the ice. He basically just cross-checks Dylan right across the breezers there. Takes the penalty. It's right out in the open. And he's praising him. Burrish is praising Shaw for taking this penalty right out in the open. And then goes on to tell you that, don't worry, he's not going to do something stupid in the third period. He would never do that. He'll just do something stupid in the second period. And I like Andrew Shaw a lot. I do. I like talking with the guy, the chances I had to talk with him. But that can't be in addition to whatever that was.
Well, look, Dylan played 23 minutes last night. If you wanted to find a reason to get even with Dylan for his clean hit on Patrick Kane, by the way, the opportunity will present itself. He's going to be out there. He's easy to find. But in the moment where Shaw took that penalty, the Sharks had just tied the game at 4 and had all the momentum. And then you're putting your penalty kill back out there?
Yeah.
The Hawks' penalty kill is 50% this year. Mm. Yes, it's 2 games. That's horrible. It's horrible. They had the worst penalty kill in the league last year. And you're going to take a dumb, selfish penalty? It's center ice in that situation. That's idiotic. And I know Andrew Shaw, part of what comes with him is those penalties. But he's got to be more aware of the situation and how the game is going. You'll have your chance later. Slash him behind the play when the ref's not looking. You know, get an elbow up in there if you have to every now and again. I don't mind hitting a guy for going after your star player, but there's a time and a place, and that was not it. And then Sheldon Brookbank, the assistant coach, coming into the third period, I wrote this down in my notes. He says, I love that stuff. It pulls everyone into the game. What? Your penalty kill blows.
Why were you not in the game?
Yes, exactly.
Right?
It's not, and not only that, you had the third line of the Blackhawks, David Kampf, Brandon Saad, and Dominic Kubalik.
They were good early.
They were all over the Sharks. All over. Kubalik had 5 shots on goal in the first period alone, and he broke up that line. He put Kubalik in the top line, which is a compliment. Hey, you're playing well. Come up here. But once Cowton did that, the entire thing fell apart. Nothing worked. It was a change for the sake of it, and it's almost that precise moment when the game fell apart and they lost it.
Well, I hope Calvin DeHaan is really good, because right now the defenseman that I trust most is Olli Maatta.
Yes,
Olli Maatta.
That's probably
hello, Maatta.
Olli Maatta's fine. He's he's your young Brent Sopel, right? A guy who's not going to cost you a lot.
He's not a hunchback, though.
He's not fast.
He said young.
He can move the puck a little bit, but if he's your best defenseman, your defense sucks. And I think only Mata would tell you that.
Well, it might not be great. This segment is brought to you by Nutrisystem for Men. See how simple losing weight can be with Nutrisystem. The meals come to your door, you eat the food, and lose the weight. Order at Nutrisystem.com/radio. Restrictions apply. Call or see website for details. Let's grab a phone call,
yeah,
shall we?
We could do that.
Garrett's in Lafayette. He's on the score. Hey, Garrett.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Sorry, this isn't a hockey comment, but I was thinking about the Cubs and the hire and how some people are upset about whether it's David Ross or who it's going to be. None of that actually matters. What matters is the roster. And this roster for the last 2 years has not performed enough to be able to advance in the playoffs. So this roster has to be changed. And if everybody is all caught up on if it's a different manager, Connie Mack couldn't have won with the team last year. It has nothing to do with that. It has to do with defense, has to do with the bullpen, and timely hitting. And they lacked all three of those areas. And if Theo can address those properly, then it really doesn't matter who the manager is as long as he just doesn't screw it up.
Well,
it doesn't matter as much when you have an optimized roster.
Yeah.
That's true. But
the Dodgers would tell you Dave Roberts figured out ways to... But then again, maybe that's just falling under the level of screwing it up.
They're still mad. There are still investors there. A big name, famous investors.
Yeah, man.
Really unhappy.
That whole loss came with a lot of salt. You know, it's just a whole lot of salt from those top boxes there at Dodger Stadium. I promise you that. And I think you're right. I think Garrett's right in that the roster needs so much change.
They
and,
know it.
And yet, because of their financial situation pressed up against the luxury tax like they have been and like they probably will be again next year, and with a whole bunch of guys that really should be within the window, the options to change this roster have to be kind of – they're going to be tough. I mean, they're going to be gut punches. This is going to be – I mean – they make a deal. I think part of what Theo was setting people up for it in terms of expectations, when he was talking about sometimes what's important in a trade is what you're getting back, making sure that you're, Sahadov was talking about it just before, that you're covering a couple of different areas, that because you've moved the guy, the important thing to look at here is everything you're getting back, the everything part of it, that preps Cubs fans, or at least ought to, for some somewhat distasteful moves. Fan favorites who might have to get kicked off the roster and traded for other parts that help make everybody else better.
Yeah, but you start using the word fan favorite right now. You can't have fan favorites when you don't make the playoffs. It doesn't matter. When you are trying to win a World Series, if you are a fan of the team, find a new favorite. Your favorite thing should be the team winning 100 games.
I suppose you're right. There are enough Cubs fans who have flopped on Chris Bryant for no damn reason.
Yeah, hear the opposite of fan favorites. Why is this guy still around? Trade this guy. Get rid of this guy.
I think Javi probably still captures most of the imagination and hope and joy of Cubs fans. Like, sure, he strikes out a lot, and sure, he was bad, but he was hurt and all that kind of stuff. And he comes with all of that strikeout. Like, you, even as you were falling in love with Javi Baez, as the general Cub fan was falling in love with Javi, you understood the limitations that he had based on everything broadcasts told you while he was coming up, everything Joe Maddon told you about him when he got there. I think Javi probably still exists in a magical bubble, probably.
Probably does. I'll always have Javi confusing me. Of when I asked him, I was trying to get some inside dope on where he would get his Puerto Rican food in Chicago. You know, I've got my spot that I like right near me.
Yeah, that's right.
Borinquen Lounge, which is tremendous. So we were in a break and we were over at the Brick House Tavern.
Yeah.
Like, so where do you get comida?
Yeah,
Puerto
you were trying
Ricania.
To shake him down.
Yeah, and he just looks at me and goes, Humble Bar. There's a place called Humble Bar.
Never been there.
No, I don't think they. I'm thinking Humble Bar. I guess, okay, yeah, he goes, oh, yeah, definitely Humble Bar. And I'm like, okay, there is a place called Humble Bar.
No, really?
But he was just saying Humboldt Park.
Ah, well, that makes sense.
Yes, he was saying Humble Bar.
What is, does like, Humble Bar do food?
Humble Bar is in Humboldt Park.
Really?
Humble Bar itself is a wink to a heavily accented Puerto Rican pronunciation of Humboldt Park, which comes off as Humboldt Bar. But I don't think they have Puerto Rican food, which is where I got really confused. Now, there is a Borinquen. The original Cafe Borinquen is in Humboldt Park.
Okay.
Which is the same food as the Borinquen Lounge at Western and Grace that I like to go to.
That's it. Now we're getting Humboldt Bar.
Arroz con gondules, and they make their own proprietary hot sauce called the Jibaro sauce to go with their jibarito. Mm. But they do these pastelillos and these unbelievable salt cod puffs that are like a salt cod croquette.
Yeah.
All
right.
Yeah.
I mean, anything.
And the rice with the.
I'm in for the plantain sandwich thing.
That's the jibarito.
You don't have to get those on plantain, but I'm in for the plantain bread sandwich thingy.
They also do a mofongo, which is the mashed plantain. It's like a mashed potato, but it's plantain, and there is so much garlic in it that you will weep garlic tears, and do not go to the gym because anybody within three treadmills of you is going to call the police.
Are you honestly scheduling your trips to the Borinquen food place and right before the gym?
No, I'm not.
Is that how you've learned that?
I wouldn't be that guy.
Yeah, no.
But it's it's so good. Can we get some Puerto Rican food? I'm starving.
I just ordered Grubhub for the guys.
Yeah,
I
asked you Taco Bell. That's Puerto Rican.
I asked you if you wanted it on the order.
Close enough. Hey, we're going to do Friday Fung at the top of the hour. Some of these emails are not to be believed. Your calls, your emails, please don't be my neighbor is the bit. And it's stories of your creepy, weird, annoying, bad neighbors. I can't believe I've never done this before.
No, this would be good.
This is going to be really good. I'm really excited for this. We are in for Lawrence Holmes, Bernstein and McKnight on the score. You're asking, what are they still doing here? What'd you do with Lawrence Holmes? Where is he? Well, he's on vacation. So we figured, what the hell? We can stick around for a couple more hours.
Yeah, we're happy to do it.
What are we going to do that's all that important? Usually we just do our dumbass leftovers video, and sometimes I write something, and I kind of hang around here and do a crossword puzzle. I don't know.
Do you wander less around the hallways when we do like these extended shows, when we spend a couple hours
hanging
in for Lawrence? Yeah, do you wander as much? Haunt the corridors as much?
Well, it depends if it's a writing day or not. It depends if Cody wants me to write, and then I have to sort of sequester myself and find some open computer, because Parkins needs that one and Shipkowski needs the other one, and then if I can get to one of the update studio, I'll use that one, and then I kind of hang out. It was fun. Oh, God, yesterday.
That's right. I forgot Shep learned how to use a computer. That means we got to give him one.
It's got the pictures, though.
Three buttons.
Yeah.
It's in the computer.
it's color-coded. I finished up writing in the update studio, and I just heard this uproarious laughter outside the studio. And what a fun time to have a conversation with the group that consists of Anthony Herron, Olin Krutz, and Jason Goff.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Made my day.
There you go.
Just absolutely made my day.
I caught.
Seeing the pictures of Jace and hearing seeing all the videos of that kid. It's just like a absolute bundle of positive energy. Just just throwing off positivity.
Did he have Jace in?
Not
here
with him. He showed videos and telling stories about him. No, when he was in here that day, that was just like
sprinting around and throwing himself into walls. It was awesome.
But they're wearing the same shoes and everything. Like they coordinate shoes.
It's a good
stuff,
look.
And their look. They go in the big shoe closet, and it's so cool. Got kids that entering the greatest age. When you start really entering the stage of being a toddler where you're engaged and expressing yourself. And it comes with the tantrums. It comes with downsides.
I was just going to say, everybody tells me that the threes and fours, the meltdowns are really something else.
The meltdowns are insane.
Okay.
But they're worth it for the upside, because that's the age when they still think you're infallible. They still think you're just awesome.
He's cute.
That everything you do is cool and great, and they haven't seen through the fact that you're a total fraud.
Sure.
Completely making it up as you go along.
They've not listened to your radio show yet.
And that you're absolutely terrified of everything and have no idea what's going on in the world.
Yeah. Those were the days, Dan. Those were the days.
Right? So once you know you're getting out of that phase, You kind of, you know, resign yourself to your fate in the world.
So I suppose that's the question for a young man like myself who's not quite there yet. Does that veil get pierced like right away? Do they wake up one morning and realize that you're a complete and utter fraud, or does that take a long time to erode? Like, does that over the period
fast.
Of six to nine?
Yeah, no, nine is still close to pretty good. You know, once you start getting to like seventh and eighth grade, that's when it really hits, and then when high school comes around, forget it.
It's long gone.
It also depends on if it's first kid or second kid. First kid's a little bit later to it. The second kid gets told by the first kid, like, yeah, he's full of crap, or that thing, like, yeah, he doesn't mean that, or
that promise,
he's never going to fulfill that, you know, and it's, no, dad isn't really good at that, and he's not really good at that either.
Sure, he threatens the shed, but you never end up out there. You're going to be fine.
Yeah, but it's been those years when everything is the greatest and everything is awesome, and you can set everything up as something bigger and grander than it actually is. Part of it is just they're not as experienced in the world, but they don't give you that look like, yeah, right. Yeah,
it sounds like you kind of enjoyed making the hoopla, you know, like creating
the thing, right?
That's the fun part?
That's the bit when it's like special breakfast time. Oh, my God, special breakfast time. You know, what does that mean? Well,
what does that mean?
I'm about to make it up as I go along, but it's going to be very breakfast and very, very, very special. And you kind of revisit it a little bit where, you know, it's usually special breakfast meant I used the big frying pan to saute like meat or sausage the night before.
Okay.
And I would leave the grease in the pan.
Real healthy.
And then the next morning I'd come down and make the eggs in the grease of whatever. That was part of special breakfast. So I figured I would do it again. And I made the kids like, oh, really? You're doing special breakfast?
Look, it's special breakfast.
And I made it. And he says to me, because you know what? This is pretty damn good.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah,
that's gonna warm you up a little bit.
Yeah. You know, I forgot how good this was. Yeah, so
that's gotta feel good, as opposed to wanting to hit them over the head with a pen if they hadn't reacted that way.
Well, wielding the pen does give a sense of parental power.
Well, good hefty one.
Just
having
it there.
Just let them know. It's like the shed. You never end up in the shed, but it's there. It's always there.
Slam on the cooktop to make a point. That kind of thing. The top of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Northwestern Football at Ryan Field this fall when the Wildcats, led by Big Ten Coach of the Year Pat Fitzgerald, host Ohio State, Iowa, Purdue, and Minnesota in Big Ten play. Single-game tickets to see Chicago's Big Ten team are on sale now at NUSports.com.
Okay.
What are you
waving
at?
We have Friday Funk coming up in just a couple of minutes.
Yes, we do.
Before we get there, I have to tell you this, because in an hour it might not be true. Right now, trending on Twitter in the Chicago area, Curt Schilling.
No.
Yes, it's happened. It's happened. It's retweeted. The baseball circles have made it around. Remember, Bob Nightingale, USA Today, tweeted out that friends close to Curt Schilling, which is news in and of itself, that he's got friends close by, say he would love to get back into the game and has significant interest in interviewing for the Phillies managerial opening and or the Red Sox pitching coaching job. That tweet, it's now made it around and it's trending in Chicago. I love you all.
I would like that,
Thank you.
Doesn't mean it's going to happen.
It's amazing. Okay. Friday Fung.
Yep. Jay Zawoski had a little issue with his neighbor being a total bag, and we figured that now that we've got a little room to breathe on a Friday during the Bears bye week, we want your stories of neighbors next to whom you have lived or near whom you've lived who have been troubling, odd, memorable for dubious reasons. 312-644-6767, Friday Fung, a score tradition. Let's do this. It's next on Sports Radio 670.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.